You are listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. Call in to live News for the Soul shows daily for intuitive coaching, readings, numerology, leading edge health information, and much, much more with featured hosts from around the world. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
This is Visibility Coach Stephanie Stanton, and welcome to High Vibe Chick, a space of powerful feminine leadership and unapologetic receiving. Here we experience real talk from highly intuitive women, remembering that we truly are all in this together. Ready or not, High Vibe Chick is here. Hello all, and welcome to today's show. I am so psyched to introduce you to my dear friend and mentor, health and business coach, Carly Fain. Carly is an author, speaker, and coach for celebrities and driven women. Carly helps her clients prosper while staying true to themselves. I am so blessed to have crossed paths with this amazing woman years ago. While on vacation, the universe conspired to bring us together, and she became a major influence in my life. Her intuitive coaching really helped me own my values and my value in my business. Carly radiates love and permission to put yourself first, and I'm so excited for you guys to get some of her magic. Carly, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, my goodness, dear Stephanie. I'm delighted to be here, and thank you for that super warm and welcoming intro. I forgot that we met when you were on vacation.
Of course
I totally
did.
Forgot. That's how it all began. We were floating in a pool. Yeah.
Yes.
What a great way to meet.
There she is. It's so funny, guys. Like, we were on vacation. We share a mutual friend. We met each other, and then we spent the entire day, like talking about coaching and talking about marketing. And
it's so fun. We did. Yes. We blew off our mutual friend, and we just, like, sometimes you just meet somebody, and they're just your person, you know? We just met. Like, oh, there you are. I've been, I've been looking for you for a long time. There you are. Thank you for reminding me of how it all began. I forget now. Gosh.
I've been so looking forward to talking to you all month. I've been missing your energy, and I'm so grateful to connect with you today.
The feeling is mutual.
Thanks, love. Mm-hmm. Every time I have a radio show, something happens that day that is so synchronistic and so perfect for the guests I'm about to have. And this morning, I woke up with this, long to-do list, and literally my body was like, you're going to stay on the couch until, 12:45. You're not going to go to your mastermind group with other, coaches and teachers. You're not going to do the dishes. You're not going to, make all those emails. You're not going to write them. You're just going to chill out. And I said, how perfect that is my feeling today. I'm about to talk to Carly.
One of my favorite authors, Terry Tempest Williams, she says, my body is my compass. It does not lie. And I just love how good you are at hearing the information that your body's giving you. And acknowledging and on good days, listening to it. It's powerful. Because I know what level of courage it takes for high achievers to say, okay, I had all these plans today, and now I might have to scrap them or alter them. That's not easy. That's not easy to do. So I'm celebrating the fact that you did it.
Thank you. And to work with the guilt of it, right? It's I don't let the guilt control me anymore, but I'm still, I can feel it still there. So I need you to share with this audience why Driven Women, why you talk about reclaiming time, like what this is for you.
Oh, okay. So years of coaching, I've had my company for 14 years now. And in the beginning, I would help people come up with these great plans, really good strategies for how to up-level their health or their relationships or their career. That's kind of the big three that I'm working on, health, relationships, and career. And I learned, took me a couple years, I wish I learned it faster, Steph, I learned that it didn't matter how good of a plan we could come up with and how well-intended they were. If they didn't have the time to implement the plan, none of it was going to happen. Like, so we could come up with a great, for example, simple marketing plan for your business, but then if you don't have the time to actually sit down and develop it, then it doesn't matter. And so I just kept rewinding and realized if I want to be of service to anyone, I'm going to have to figure out how to help high-achieving women reclaim what becomes their most valuable commodity, time. And, you know, we live in a culture where we run on Dunkin', right? Back to the commercial, anyway. That's what Dunkin' would have us believe, right? It's like we run on Dunkin'. And so it really does take an act of rebellion and of courage in the face of all this messaging that says do more to say, I don't just want to do more. I want to do my best. And doing our best and doing all the things don't usually happen at the same time. So that's what brought me, I hope that answers the question, that's what brought me to this sense of reclaiming time being the most valuable thing a driven woman could do. Because from there, then we can do whatever it is that gives us life. But without a sense of spaciousness or at least a little bit more wiggle room, it doesn't matter how well-intended we are. And I say that with a lot of love because I'm so curious for any of your listeners, you know, it's like we come up with really good goals or really good ideas for ourselves, and then we don't follow through, and then we judge ourselves for not following through as if it was falls on us when really perhaps the system that's working us to the bone is the problem. And that's where it makes a little sense to pay a little attention, do a little tweaking.
I've been thinking about this so much, Carly, like how for myself and my clients, like how to break free from this conditioning of our productivity equals our value, right? Equals our worthiness.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's happening on a big level right now, like planetarily, like we're kind of waking up to this. But I'm so curious, like how to do this, how to help women release this belief system that I am what I do.
Yeah. Oh, so is it okay if I speak to that for a minute?
Please. Oh, my God.
Because that's such a powerful like theme, right? And so here's an awareness I've had in the last recent, like I've been just in the last year or two, which is that there is a direct correlation between how much time a woman has to nourish herself and how powerful she will be in the world. And so that sounds good on paper, right? Like we all want to be more powerful or feel empowered or, you know, have the career we want or the time with our family or whatever it is, right? Like that all sounds good on paper. However, what's really important to understand, and we know now from the field of epigenetics, is that there are traumas that are associated with being a human woman. If you are a human woman on planet Earth, you have experienced trauma, whether that's big capital T trauma, as in something has happened personally to you, that's made you feel unsafe, or all the little traumas that make us feel unsafe throughout the day. Like even right now, I'm in Philadelphia for the week. I walk differently on the street at night, you know, I pass people and I'm hyper vigilant, and that's not unique to any woman, right? Like we all are hyper vigilant where we're walking at night or wherever. So there's that level of trauma, which tells us we need to disappear in order to be safe. And then there's the epigenetics trauma, like the trauma that's being passed to us by all the women before us that's encoded within our DNA that we're now able to quantify. We're actually able to see that coding. So having more time to get to the things we care about sounds nice, but it also means you are about to become the most powerful you have ever been. And if we don't address the trauma that is associated with being seen as a woman, we will sabotage our schedule. We will sabotage because all of our genetics and our life experience tells us It's safer if no one notices me.
Mm-hmm.
It's
if
safer.
I'm busy, if I'm
yep.
behind the scenes.
Yep. So I say this with the invitation that first we give ourselves grace. Because when we talk about reclaiming our time, make no mistake about it, it's for you, but it's actually going to shift our entire world. It's a big deal. And there are generations of trauma or beliefs or conditioning that are so adept within us that it might not happen overnight and that we might be a little messy and tricky and sticky as we go. And so a little self-kindness, if reclaiming your time isn't easy, if you found that having time management skills is really hard, or you get good at it for a week and then you stop. It's often not just about the skills. It's actually about what's underneath the skills, which is this fundamental terror of being as powerful as you actually are. Does that make sense?
Totally. I love this conversation because I think we use sort of different modalities to kind of do the same kind of work. Like for me, it's, this permission to be visible, it's safe to be seen, it's safe to be visible. And I love you're correlating the time is you're going to be seen more. If you have more time, you're going to be seen in your power more. That's so mind blowing for me. I really feel I feel like you've actually influenced me in this way, that this is a lot to do with that sacred feminine, right? That owning more of our feminine power. The idea of nurturing and nourishment, like you just said, and receptivity and intuition, this isn't just about reclaiming time. This is a balancing, right, of that femininity with that masculine that always wants to be doing.
Right. You're so right. And it is not just about reclaiming time. It's about reclaiming ourselves. It's about reclaiming who we really are, right? And it's really hard to be who you are when you're so busy putting out fires for other people that you kind of get the leftover scraps of energy at the end of the day for what we care about. And I think you're absolutely right that the more feminine way of living is more cyclical in nature, that there are moments of darkness and quiet built into the feminine cycle that we're realizing for the first time in a long time are assets in our modern economy. The ability to pause and be mindful is what leads to more creative problem solving. It initiates that parasympathetic part of the nervous system that comes up with better solutions in less time. And so creativity or space to breathe or moments to nurture yourself, they're no longer separate from our career. They're directly related to our ability to thrive professionally. And so women are suited to rock this new economy. These are skill sets that are within our DNA. And I could give you all sorts of nerdy examples if you want of how we're made and the innate wisdom within our DNA. But this is our time. But what's going to be required, right, is honoring your time in order to do that, which is, not easy for anybody who's ever tried to manage their schedule. Not easy.
Right. Yeah. And you, your expertise is with high achieving women, with driven women. And I think for us, we can do a lot. Speaking to you and I, we're both driven women, we're high achieving. We can make a lot of shit happen. We can do a lot. We're highly creative. We can have a lot of balls in the air. First, how do you do this with yourself? And second, how do you help women drop these balls? How do we do this?
I love, one of the many things that I love about you, Stephanie, is you're great, let's get practical with this.
Mm-hmm.
Great concept. How do
add it to my to-do list.
How do I make this real? How do I actually clear some stuff off my calendar? One thing to talk about it, right? It's another thing to do it. And I love this about you. So here's the background understanding about, we say a lot in my practice, daring to pause, right? Because it takes courage to pause. The thing about daring to pause for high achieving women is that we all think we want to rest more. We think that we want to learn how to meditate or sit still. It's actually for most high achieving women an anxiety inducing panic attack to be alone with our thoughts, right? So the reality is we don't pause necessarily because it feels nice, because it might not feel nice in the beginning. We pause because it increases PNP, meaning it increases our ability to have purpose and our profit. So we pause for purpose and for profit. We don't necessarily pause for comfort in the beginning.
Mm, great distinction.
So there's,
keep going. I'm literally writing that.
Right. So then we look at the big scale. Like, if I could take everything I do and distill it down to like one, you know, elevator pitch, I would say we get clear first about what it is that gives us life. Mm. It takes so much energy to run a business or a career or a household or just your own well-being, right? So we have to have things that are giving us the energy to do that. And we have to get clear about what is it that I value and what gives me life.
Right.
And then we begin to be ruthless, like get out a machete and prune away anything else that is not giving us life or living into what we value. If we don't know what we value, like if we don't consciously pause and decide what we value, we will unconsciously live the life handed to us by other people.
Right.
So it's this daring
to
pause.
I love that you brought this up because it's so, always so synchronistic when I have someone on. It's literally everything that has been a theme lately. So I feel so divine timing to talk to you right now. But yesterday I had a client text me and she's like, you know, she named the three topics that feel the heaviest for her right now. How does she work with them? How does she get around them? And I asked her, I didn't use the phrase life-giving like you just used, which I love, but I said, just what are three things that feel funnest to you right now? Like what feels like the funnest thing you can give your attention to right now? And they were like complete opposites of what she was working on constantly, you know? I said, I'll do mine. You know, mine is collaborating with high vibe women, spending time in water and doing intimacy work with my partner. Like that, those right now are the funnest, most life-giving things that I can do right now. And it's like permission to not focus on the heavy, right? And I love what you said about being clear with what gives you life and then ruthlessly pruning away things that don't.
That's exactly it. And it really does take, again, this is our theme, it seems, for the conversation. Again, it takes courage to look ourselves in the eye and say, okay, what actually is giving me life? And then comparing that to what's on our calendar for the week.
Right.
Seeing like, okay, so how much of what gives me life is actually on my calendar? And for some women, it can be really sobering in the beginning. I just had a woman recently in a program I run called Navigating a Graceful Transition with Dr. Maria Sirwa. And we had this great woman in there who looked at her calendar and said, oh my God, like there's not a single thing that gives me life on my calendar this week. No wonder. And it's this sobering moment. But then there's also this liberation on the other side of it where she no longer felt crazy. She's like, oh, well, no wonder I'm exhausted and I'm drained. Like, because there's nothing in here that's adding to my cup. There's only things that are taking out of it.
Beautifully said, Steph. So as a leader in this, Carly, like what have you had to like ruthlessly prune away? Because I want inspiration here. Like I want to hear how you sort of pulled away some things.
Yeah.
Because I know you've always been a couple steps ahead of me, and I just love being like, can I do that? Can I do that really?
I love this idea. I was just talking about this in a group coaching program that I run about like it's so helpful to have ideas modeled to us that have never occurred to us. Like this example that I gave, and I promise I'll give an example from my real world, but one of the most badass examples of somebody having boundaries that I ever witnessed was I was at a speaking event. This is a part just in the audience, and a woman was on stage. She rocked her presentation. She got off stage. Everybody was like hobnobbing, walking around, and she was next to me talking to somebody else, and I was 100% eavesdropping. And the woman she was talking to made an invitation. She said, hey, I work at this nonprofit. What you just spoke about would be so powerful. Could you come donate your time and speak to my nonprofit organization? And the speaker said, oh, no, I can't do that right now. And the woman making the invitation pushed back a little bit. And she said, oh, but this would be so helpful for them. I know they would feel really inspired. They'd walk away all revved up and ready to go. And the speaker said, oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't being clear. I can't do it because I don't want to. And it was like a mic drop moment, right? And like my jaw, I'm sure visibly opened. had never occurred to me that a human woman could say that, like, because
wow.
I don't want to. And, like, this, right? Like, so I love, like, that we can model for each other these things that we've
right.
never seen as possible. It's really hard to live into something if you've never seen it modeled, right?
Right. It's so simple, but, like, that, like, what?
Yeah. Wait, what did she just say? And that's, like, ingrained somewhere in my brain. Like, I think about her at least once a month. Like, that was,
right.
I didn't even talk to her. I just eavesdropped, and my life was transformed.
What a gift.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, like, here's an example from my real world right now. So when we talk about the big three, career, relationship, and health, what I find is that I can do extra work in one of them, those areas, as long as I can simplify the other areas, and that there will be periods of time where I need to do a little lecture for my health or a little lecture for my career or a little lecture for my relationships, and that's fine, but I just can't do a little extra in all three without personally running myself into the ground. So this right now is a launch time for my business. We're launching, the doors are open for a group program, and so I booked myself a little apartment in Philadelphia for the week because I've been quarantining with family, which includes toddlers. Mm-hmm. And like, because I knew my personal life was just going to have to be more simple for the week
right.
in order for me to show up for work a little extra without emptying my cup. And so that's one example, right?
That's
like
brilliant.
That we could, like, it's just like, and that's a fancy example because it took me a lot of years to get to this place. But in the beginning, it was really just looking at, okay, if I've got my relationships, my health, and my career, and one of them is tricky, like if let's say a relationship thing is tricky, then
right.
I have to simplify something in my career. There's some meeting that I have to say no to for this week, right? Or there's some email that I'm going to have to get okay with not replying to for this week, right? Does that answer the question a little bit?
Totally. And I love that example of like, to shift into one, you simplify the rest. And my brand is all about simplifying. I totally vibe that. And as you're talking, I'm looking at like, okay, where am I still trying to show up 100% in all areas when I am doing extra work in one department? And I see like this morning, this like need to just not do was immediately went to like, well, that was the emotional work I did last night, right? With my partner, I was tapping more into that like vulnerability piece, and we're doing couple therapy and it's amazing and we're getting so much out of it. And it does, there's no coincidence that the next day it's like, please rest. Like, you're feeling a lot, you know? It's just like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But I don't have to be on in all areas at all times. That's beautiful.
Yeah. You know, there's a woman, Kate Northrup, and she says, you know, we have to get okay with some things only being okay. And that was kind of an aha for me, like that phrase, that idea that I would just decide that something was going to only be okay. Like my email inbox was only going to be okay this week. It wasn't going to be ideal. It wasn't going to be totally emptied. Or the closet that drives me crazy in my office that's always messy, it's just going to stay like that maybe for a whole nother year. Like it's just going to be the way it is. You know, I'm just going to be okay with that being okay because of these other things that I really value that matter right now. Yeah,
definitely.
And that's all part of like
being the world's most okayest homeschooler.
that's a great example. Like there it is. And this is part of, you know, for driven women, one of the common themes that shows up for us is perfectionism, right? Which is another form. It's just fear, like in lipstick and high heels. It's another way of feeling like we have to prove our worth. And so as a recovering perfectionist who realizes this is going to probably be a lifelong thing where I'm constantly, you know, getting better at healing from my perfectionism, that getting okay with something be okay. It's like, well, the good news is I'm way better at it than I used to be. But I'm like, but it's, oh gosh, does it rear its head? That's for sure. Like for sure it rears its head. Especially to your point when I'm tired, like when I'm exhausted, then I'm scared that I'm not doing enough. And then my perfectionism goes way up. So we can start to notice some causation too around the perfectionism. Like, okay, when is it worse? What's going on? You know, when is it better? When is it more manageable? What am I doing differently then? and just noticing it. Like when I get better sleep, I'm less likely to try to be perfect because I'm more balanced and I'm okay with things, right? Like, yeah.
I'm so curious
for you.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm so curious for you. Yeah, I'm so excited to talk to you. I want like 100 questions to fit into this
hour.
You go. Yeah, you go.
I was just going to say, like, when I think of you, you know, I know your yoga teacher background. I know, like, you are major, like, when I think of you, I think of as an intuitive woman who listens to her body. And that, like, and, you know, who has overcome sort of being run by her mind and is able to really tune into her body. And I want you to share a little bit of that backstory with that, because I know that wasn't an easy transition for you. Like I remember you talking about migraines in the past. I remember you talking about just sort of learning how to drop in. And I would love you to share with people like how you became more able to listen to your body.
Absolutely. I think about the body, or at least my body, it's kind of like a casino in Vegas. It's like the house always wins. It doesn't matter how slick I try to be with the cards I'm trying to play. Like, the house is going to win. And so my body, at a really young age, like I think I was about 11 or 12 years old the first time I can recall breaking down in tears, curling up on my bed on my mom's lap and just saying, I can't keep doing as much as I'm doing. Like, I knew even then that I was going at a pace that was too hard and my body was starting to hold me accountable. And so I've had to have like a number of what I now call sacred interruptions. Like, I've had to have a number of moments where my body stopped me in my tracks. And when you mention migraines, it's like I had migraines for years, but they had to get to the point where I was having 3 a week for 24 to 48 hours each and had to quit working. Like, they had to be that serious. And one day, Stefan, I lived in New Jersey at the time. I was a waitress. And I'd already dropped out of college because my adrenal glands were fatigued. And I was waitressing for the summer trying to figure out, what am I going to do with my life? Like, everything's falling apart because my body's falling apart. And I'm laying in bed, too poor to afford air conditioning, so it was sweltering hot. And I was laying there, and it occurred to me the only time I laid down was when I had a migraine. Like, I otherwise never stopped moving. And in that moment, it occurred to me that maybe my body's not trying to mess with my work. Maybe it's trying to inform it. Like, maybe it's trying to tell me things that would make my life easier. And I wish I could tell you that I had some, like, brilliant aha at 20 years old and never had to go through that again. But I'm too dense for that. Like, I had to do it a bunch more times. Like, I had to get just well enough to go back to work and repeat the cycle, you know, until something else would happen with my body. And so there's so much, what I now know to be true is there's so much valuable information in our body. It is telling us things. And every woman has a story of, gosh, I had a hunch about something. I didn't listen to it. I wish I did. We all have that, with, you know, and you're so good with kind of harnessing the intuitive power of a woman. And it's like, call it intuition or our gut instinct or whatever you want. But it's this knowing. It's this holy knowing, as my friend Susie Banks Baum calls it. We know things. And then there's like a dozen ways we try to circumvent our knowing, by saying, oh, well, this time it'll be okay, or I'll just push for one more week, or I'll just do one more presentation or one more set of emails, or let this person talk poorly to me one more time. It's not a big deal. But the accumulation is a big deal. And so the last thing I'll say about it for right now is when I, you know, eventually I kept, you know, like sticking with it. I'd take time off. I'd come back to work, take time off, come back off to work. And I landed my first celebrity client. And when I would tour with them, I was kind of their live-in health and life coach. And this was right before I met you, like maybe 4 or 5 years before you and I met.
I'd be touring
around with them. And we would check into hotels, and there'd usually be a bell person to help bring luggage up to the rooms. And more than 50% of the time, when a bell person would get me alone in the elevator, they would turn to me and they would say, so how did you get here? How did you get like to be part of this entourage? And Steph, I hated that question because
I didn't have a good answer. Like I do plenty of work, but it was like, but I got the, I always get the phone calls when I'm rested. And like, but that sounded obnoxious, or I thought it was obnoxious. I thought it sounded like, well, gosh, your life is so easy then, Carly, because like every time you rest, magic happens. But the truth is that every time I rested, I think I saw more opportunities before me and I was able to say yes to them. And so there's this beautiful combination of how can I use my intellect? How can I show up for the work and also build in enough pauses that I can hear my knowing and leverage that as part of my professional strategy. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes so much sense. And my whole body is tingling. I'm like, yes, yes.
And like, yeah.
Every woman like knows if we things. All let ourselves do that. Like, yeah. Oh, because I really do feel like women are going to lead men in this because, you know, like I look at my partner, it's very easy for him to overwork. He has his own business. You know, it's like it's only 4 years old. So it's very easy for him to overwork and get to that overwhelmed place. And I know if I try to steer him to self-care, it's not going to work as well as if I just role model it. Like, it's okay, right? For you to take some time off.
Yeah.
It's okay for you to take that pause and self-reflect. And I really do feel like women are going to sort of show the way to this because it is a more feminine quality, right? To nourish ourselves and nurture ourselves. So, like, could you imagine what would happen in this world if we really gave ourselves permission, like half of the planet gave ourselves permission to stop doing so much? And women are so good at doing it all. And, like, what if we could just listen to our knowing? I love that so much.
Yeah. Well, did you know, back in 2008, when the housing bubble burst in the United States, of course, it had a global impact around the world. Like the markets around the world were really impacted. And over in Iceland, there was a span, a two-week span, where I think it was 75, maybe 80% of businesses shut down within 2 weeks in some of the major cities in Iceland. And so they were hit particularly hard. And every single bank there folded, with the exception of one bank. And that bank was run by women. And they had a two-part policy that was the only thing that made them significantly different from their competitors. And their two-part policy around these home loans was A, we won't sell a loan where the small print doesn't make sense. Like, if we don't understand it, we're not going to sell it because something's not right then. And then their other thing was, we're not going to sell loans to people who we know are not going to be able to afford it in 4 or 5 years from now. They knew that this was the right thing to do. And everybody else was making millions and millions and millions selling these loans to people who couldn't actually afford them. And then, lo and behold, the market crashes, and they're the only bank left standing. And what was really interesting about Iceland's response to this was that they bailed their banks out, just like the United States banks were bailed out. However, as part of their bailout agreement with the government, all banks in Iceland had to appoint a female president for a period of time. And the president of the bank that did well was elected as prime minister of the country. So a woman was made prime minister as a result of listening to her knowing. And so I think that's a great example of when we initially listen to our knowing, it may fly in the face of the status quo and people may question it. And this is part of why I love your work, because you're all about creating community stuff. Like the High Vibe community is so tight-knit and beautiful and supportive. And so being around other people who are also listening to their knowing and supporting us and listening to our knowing is really important. But there's something beautiful about honoring it quietly, you know, in small choices each day, one little tiny thing each day, that brings us a little bit closer to our own knowing resource. It's a valuable resource.
Yeah. Oh, it so speaks to me, too, because I understand. I've gotten to a place where I understand now that it's not what I say. It's not, you know, it's how I be. It's how I vibe. That is the most influential thing I can share with people. And it really speaks to me to role model this more. I would love to hear just like what's one
way that we can up our role model of this? Like, and I think you touched on it before, but I just I want to be able to see it so I can start it in action today.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. This is great. So the first step in honoring our knowing is to start throwing flags. And when I say throwing flags, this is like the closest to a sports reference that I'm ever going to get. but it's like, you know, like if you're watching soccer or some sport that has flags and referees,
yes.
And somebody does something that's not cool, then right. they throw the flag, right? So what we want to start doing with our knowing is just start to throw internal flags. Just notice when something doesn't feel right to you. Or when it feels particularly right, especially if it feels disproportionately good to what you think it should feel like. So, like, for example, I don't know, right now watching Parks and Rec reruns on Netflix feels so freaking good to me. It doesn't make sense how good it feels to me.
Yeah.
Like, my logical brain is like, well, this is crap TV. What are you doing? You know,
yeah.
But it feels so good, right? Like, my knowing knows I need this level of silliness and joy and humor.
Right.
Maybe it's about
right.
the comfort because I already know what's going to happen next in every episode, you know.
Right.
So
I
it's
get that.
Just – the first step is just to notice. Before you even do anything differently, regardless of whether or not you might even speak up about your knowing, the first step in reclaiming your knowing is trusting yourself when you feel the way you feel. That's it. Like, the first thing that happens is like, oh, I know something. And then all the reasons why we don't know it get piled on almost immediately
right.
from our brain. Right. And I'll give a
right.
very powerful example of this. So I was in, when I was traveling, you know, as a live-in coach for celebs, we were in San Francisco for like a night or two, and we're staying at a hotel close to a Whole Foods. And I went to Whole Foods and there was like the hot bar, and I'm like putting together a little meal. And this gentleman walked behind me, and literally, like, the hairs in the back of my neck stood up. And it just – something felt really, really wrong. And I looked over, and he appeared to be, like, maybe he was living on the street. And I – my whole gut said something's wrong. And then immediately my brain said, how dare you judge this man, Carly? You don't know him. Maybe you're judging him because he looks like maybe he's homeless. And, like, what are your issues? Why are you – you know, and, like, so my brain is telling me all the reasons why I'm being a bad person, and I'm casting judgments. So
right.
that's that. I don't think anything else. I close my little meal tray, buy my food. I leave the store with my small bag of groceries. And long story short, there's a longer version to this, but the shorter version is I'm walking back to the hotel and I hear a man screaming behind me. And I turn around and look, and it's the same man, and he's cornered a young woman on the street.
Mm.
He's physically grabbed her, and he's shaking her, and he's screaming at her, and she's paralyzed in fear, and there's nobody else around. It's just the three of us. And, you know, the good news was I was able, like, to get the gumption to, like, intercede, and everything worked out, and everybody went peacefully their own way. But my whole being knew that something was wrong with this person. That this person was potentially dangerous. And I was so quick to negate that knowing. Like, there it was.
Right.
And so the first is just to trust our knowing.
Right.
And this is something that, bear with me, I think your audience can handle this. I'm going to be really bold right now. There's something about COVID. Like, I'm just done holding my tongue on things.
Totally. Totally.
Part of the reason that things like white supremacy and capitalism gone wrong and the patriarchy, part of the reasons they work really well in dominating women is that they have taught us that we can't trust women. And on some level, we as women have ingrained that belief. And so we won't trust ourselves. And now they don't have to do the work for us because we'll do it for ourselves. We'll hear our own knowing and then we'll negate it. And so this is a very long way of answering your question and saying the first step in tapping into your own knowing is to start to just throw flags. Just notice when you might know something and trust that it's right, regardless of whether or not, like, step two is to, like, maybe act on it. But step one is just to consider trusting yourself. Just consider it.
You know, Carly, when you brought that up about how we've been conditioned to not trust women and therefore not trust ourselves and do that work, I realized in that moment that, you know, so much of my work on coming to a more self-confident place and trustworthy place has been around trusting women more and more and more and more. Like my friend network from 15 years ago to now has completely up-leveled, right? Like the women I am around and attract completely more high vibe and trustworthy. And it really reflects my sort of stretch into I'm worthy of this. I can trust myself. I can say what I need to say. I can be authentic with other women. I can be vulnerable. I can trust women. And it's so interesting because I was just doing that, like, is it the chicken or the egg thing? Like, did I trust myself and then attract this, or did I attract this and begin to trust myself? Because I think you're so right. Like, that is, to me, the way to get to trust myself was through the eyes of other women, such as yourself. Like, we're through believing eyes of high-vibe women. And I am so pained when I see women not connected to other women, like not having a high-vibe tribe, not practicing vulnerability with women. It's like, oh, there's such a treasure there that is a reflection of self that they're missing out on.
Oh, that is so beautifully said. And I think that this is two major ways, there's multiple, there's many ways, but two major ways that women are being silently suppressed right now is certainly through being overscheduled, because the woman who doesn't have time can't actually get to the thing she cares about, won't actually improve the quality of the world if she's just trying to put out fires all day long. And the other way is separating women from themselves. And when I say from themselves, I mean from each other, but I also mean from your own self. And it's so beautiful to hear you talk about it. I love how you share just so openly your own experience, to hear you share that this, like, I love chicken before the egg, or the other way around. Like, who knows? And really, who cares? But it's like together, right? Like, as you start to trust yourself more, you're able to form more meaningful relationships, and vice versa. As you have these relationships where you can trust, then you have a more meaningful relationship with yourself. But there is, this is one way that we change the course of history, is to begin to trust women. And I know, like, when we see somebody like Dr. Blasey Ford up on the stand, you know, testifying about her experience of assault, and a lot of us, not all of us, right, but a lot of us believe her, you know, and we look at her and we say, I trust her, and we're tired of seeing women not be trusted. I think the next step of that is to say, well, then where can I trust myself first also? Right? Like, it's some, for some of us, it's still easier to trust the voice of another woman. But we can, when we hear them speak up against a violence or a trauma or something that's happened for them. But I think there's also something to be said about the violence we commit against ourselves all day long when we know things and then we tell ourselves to shut up about it. And you brought up, like, kind of my yogic background, right? So I was raised in a yoga ashram. And one of the principles of yoga, like, there's the, for lack of a better phrase, there's got to be a better way of saying this, but they're almost like the commandments. Yoga is not a religion, but it's got these 10 do's and don'ts. And one of the do's is called ahimsa. And ahimsa is nonviolence. And it includes nonviolence to self. And I think about that a lot, because I think in the way I ran my business for a long time, and I still have to keep an eye out for it, I will inadvertently be violent to myself in the way I talk and the way I expect more out of myself than is reasonable. Like, I would never talk to one of my team members or my staff the way I would talk in my own head to myself. And this is part of the ingrainedness of not of being told that we can't trust women, and being told that we're making a fuss if we actually point out that something's not working.
Thank God for like how we are constantly attracting ourselves and others. Like, thank God for that, because I feel like, you know, we're all just really helping each other with this worthiness, with this enoughness, with this, it's okay to be feminine. It's okay to be seen. It's okay to be loving to yourself. Like, thank God we're in this together, because it's so much longer, but on our own to figure this out.
I think, and you are particularly so good at that, at creating safe community for women to be together and to trust each other The work you do is so powerful in that way. I've always been so deeply moved by your ability to, I mean, literally just strike up a conversation with a person on a float in a pool. And, you know, the next thing you know, you and I are having these like deep, meaningful talks within 30 minutes of meeting each other. And I think that when you talk about how it's one thing to teach something and it's another thing to live it, you're talking about embodied leadership. Like, so there's like typical leadership where we're teachers and we're teaching facts and information.
Right.
And that's, there's a place for that. Like, we need to learn facts and information. But when we are in the presence of an embodied teacher, somebody who's actually walking their talk, we can feel it. We want to be there. And we don't even always know what it is why we like this person, but we just know that
right.
we do. We want to be in the presence of somebody who's walking their talk. And so that's one way of, you know, growing our business, is being the person who walks their talk, who does the real work.
Right.
And I say real work intentionally because I don't know if this is relatable for you or not, Steph. I'd be curious to hear. But like for a lot of high-achieving women, we say that we don't mind hard work. And I call BS on us, myself included, because the truth is, like, putting forth long hours or doing the most or going above and beyond is not hard for us. That's our comfort zone. Like, that's where we feel good. What's hard for us is daring to pause.
Right.
And that's the gateway to embodied leadership, right? That's the gateway to reclaiming our time and being the woman who lights up the room that other people want to come work with or work for, not because she's making them, but because they want to be in the presence of somebody who's walking their talk. This is the time for that level of authenticity that you embody so fully.
Well, you too, Carly. I was thinking as you're speaking about how much I get out of seeing when you post your mandalas. Like, Carly makes these beautiful nature-based visual mandalas. I'm guessing you go out in nature, you have some time to yourself, and you create this beautiful visual image. And I'd love you to share a little bit about that with it. But I want you to know that as someone who's just seeing you post that picture, it's like, oh, I get a little of that too. Like, I can taste the pause you're taking. And even in my busy day, just looking at that, like, oh, I'm allowed to, I feel the permission there. I feel the connection in nature there. Like, it's like, that is you being that embodied leader. And I thank you for it. I thank you so much for it. Yeah,
I would have never known that. That is, thank you for telling me that. Like, I'm going to keep doing it now. I mean, I was already going to keep doing it, but now I'm like, I'll definitely keep doing it if it gives anybody else permission, right, to give themselves permission, you know, to take a beat. But yeah, so creating the mandalas, it's something we used to do way back in the ashram. Lots of different cultures have different versions of it. And for me, it's just about going out to nature, sometimes, Steph, for 1 minute. It's like I will spend 1 minute making something. Sometimes I'll spend an hour making, a fancier mandala. But it's going out, finding things that catch my eye, and then just arranging them in a pattern that feels good with no agenda. And part of why it helps me so much is that, A, it has nothing to do with work, which is why for me it has everything to do with work, because and for that moment my brain is on a total vacation. But I find that for myself, being really ambitious and having goals, that it's so easy for me to focus on progress and then have a hard time being in the present moment and enjoying what's already good. So the mandalas for me are all about presence. They're all about, like, okay, if I just keep my eyes open, what leaf looks cool? What stick is around? Is there like a robin's egg, you know, that's hatched that I could use? Like, what, you know? And so it's about tending to beauty, and beauty has a real place in calming our nervous system and calling us back to presence. So I find for me, it's a really balancing thing. And I'll definitely keep posting them, you know, for anybody else.
Please.
I love when people tag me in your mandalas. But like, what's your mandala, right? Like, it doesn't have to be making mandalas. Your mandala might be going for a walk. It might be the way you pour, you know, almond milk into your coffee in the morning. It might be the way, you know, you really love the smell of your shampoo and you thoroughly enjoy the smell of it when you're, you know, scrubbing your head for 20 seconds. It's like, what is the thing that calls me back to presence?
Yeah.
Because that's where there's clarity. right? There's clarity in the present moment. Yeah.
What's my mandala has been soaking in my blow up hot tub, which I absolutely love. I go out early in the morning. I sit in my blow up hot tub and I look up at the trees and I just soak. And it's like that beautiful, like soothing warm water in nature, and I can float and I just feel so grateful for that time. Yeah, that's been my
I love that you start your day like that, right?
Well,
like, I know everybody's got different schedules. Right.
Right. About half the week, but yes.
it's pretty great.
It's pretty great.
That's pretty great, yeah. And so, like, I think what helps for some of us who are career motivated is, you know, to stop seeing this stuff as separate from our work, you know, and to see it as that this is related to my work, because there is, like, the foundation of your career is you.
Right.
It'll always be you. And so to be able to make sure that you're getting what you need first thing in the day, or at least some point during the day, and that that's not separate from your work, that this is actually a part of your work.
I love that point, because I'm really feeling and seeing so clearly the interconnection, that it's all connected. Like, if I am having, you know, raising my vibes in my relationship, all of a sudden I had 3 coaching clients call, like, in a week, you know, like, there's abundance in both areas. If I, if I'm nourishing my body, like, I just, it feels like I can, you know, think better in my business. Like, it's all so goddamn related, and it's so funny how like compartmentalized it we can be about it. Like, I was always fascinated that when I would, you know, go to a retreat or a healing workshop for the weekend, how when I would come back, my photography sessions were like outstanding. Like, I was totally in flow, and it's like, of course that makes sense, right? Like, it's all connected. You raise your vibes in one area and your work will prosper. And it's like how easy it is to forget that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that this goes back to this very testosterone-based way of seeing things. Like, when you say compartmentalized, that's the perfect word, right? It's like we inadvertently fragment ourselves into all these different roles. There's, like, you know, the worker me, there's the colleague me, there's the friend me, there's the aunt me, there's the spouse me, there's the sister me, whatever, right? Like, there's all these different versions of ourselves and all these different roles we have to have. And when we fragment the way we view ourselves, we begin to fragment our energy too. And we begin to feel pulled in a lot of different directions. And so when you talk about, like, taking a retreat or getting in the hot tub or, you know, earlier example, shampooing your hair with intention. You're going to shampoo your hair anyway, right? So it's like doing it with intention for 20 seconds. We're no longer fragmenting who we are. You've always been a whole being. All of that was an illusion. And so when we stop fragmenting ourselves into these different roles, then we can no longer be pulled in all these different directions. But we are the one whole being that sits at the center of all of this. And we can begin to call things to us, like you do beautifully with your example. Like, now you've got all these photography clients when you come back from nurturing yourself. And this flies in the face of what we've been taught. And yet, for many of us who practice, you know, daring to pause, we find it's actually incredibly reliable. It's, like, predictable that when we rest, things start to do a little bit better.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes so much sense. Like, the more rested you are, the higher your frequency, the more allowing you are of all good things. And it's so funny how, again, how we can forget it. I know people have loved this interview and really will want more of you, Carly. So you have to tell them how they can get more of you and where to find you. And maybe about your program that you're launching right now.
Oh, well, thank you for that opportunity.
Yeah.
The program we have is called the Reclaiming Time Studio, so actually very on point for this this conversation. And it's a cozy little cohort of women who all run their own businesses or they're particularly career-driven who want to reclaim their time and begin to operate in a way that gives them life through their career. And so the doors open only twice a year, and they're open right now until this Friday, August 21st. So if anyone's interested, I encourage you, go, you know, see if it's for you. You'll know within 30 seconds of reading the webpage if it's for you.
Right.
So you can go to carlyfain.com That's KARLEEFAIN.com, and you'll see it there. And the other thing you can do is absolutely, like on the website, or if you listen to my podcast, Messy and Magnificent, there's always the free link to take my Boundaries Like a Boss class, which is free for anybody. And it's like an hour online, do it at your own pace, you know, just totally designed specifically for driven women who want the 5 practical steps to reclaiming your time through setting really good boundaries. Because golly, I wish somebody taught me how to set boundaries sooner. And how it amazing.
Right?
It saved
I love
me a
that
lot
name.
Of time.
I love that, like Boundaries Like a Boss. That is such a good name. I can't believe we didn't talk about Messy and Magnificent, but you guys, really, this podcast is so good. Carly pours her whole heart into it. So please check it out. Messy and Magnificent. It's so good. Carly, thank you so much for being here. I love you so much.
I am honored. Every time you and I talk, I walk away with 7 new ways of seeing things. You give me nourishment. I am so grateful for who you are, Steph, and for the way you're showing up in the world. It's a gift.
Aww,
really.
Thank you so much. I will receive that. Thank you. So as we come to an end of today's show, I hope you, the audience, feel deep permission to trust deeper and reclaim time for yourself. Until we meet again, stay high vibe, chicks. Thank you, Carly.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.